Welcome to The Parenting Show with Pina Crispo from chicmama.ca on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Happy Sunday and welcome to The Parenting Show. I'm your host, Pina Crispo of chicmama.ca. And we are halfway through January already, January 2021, a brand new year. But one thing that stays the same, or I should say remains, is that January tends to be a really hard month for people. The holidays have come and gone. The bills are like stacking up. And we've got to pay all those Christmas gifts that we like charge to our credit cards. So money isn't always the best this month, but it's always the weather too. Like you go outside, well, depending where you live. If we were in Hawaii, I probably wouldn't be saying this, but here in Canada and parts of the US, you go outside, it's dark, it's gloomy, it's gray, the snow, and it can really get you down. Then you add COVID on top of things, and it's pretty I'm not going to lie. Tomorrow is Blue Monday, and they say that that's the most depressing day of the year. Is it something that is legit real? Is it something that's made up? I don't know, but I can tell you that like January, February for me are pretty hard. And I think mental illness, we spoke a little bit about this last week on the show, but I think mental illness is something that we really, really need to be talking about now more than ever. So about 2 years ago, I came across a story, and a story that just blew my mind and has stayed with me since. It was a story about a young man named Kevin Hines. I don't want to give it away because I have him joining me on the show today, and I'm so honored to have him as my guest. And so I want him to share his story with us. So you hear directly from him, not from me. So from Atlanta, Kevin Hines is joining us on the line. Kevin, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. So Kevin, you are a advocate. You're a survivor. When we talk about suicide, like you don't hear about those stories often, a suicide survivor, which is interesting, which is what I want you to talk about, which is what you're going to talk about. You're also a filmmaker and you're an advocate on mental health, right?
You bet.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I'm also a husband and a good son, I would say.
Yes, I would agree, because I've had some conversations with your wife going back and forth, just getting the show ready for today. And I've watched some stuff where you talk about your relationship with your dad, and it just warmed my heart. So Kevin, I don't know, where do we start? How have you been doing? How have you been doing right now? Let's start with that.
I've been doing really, really well. I've been working hard on my mental health and staying sane during COVID times, which is hard to do. You know, this is an unprecedented time in world history, and people's limits are being tested. Their well-being is being tested. Their wellness, their mental health is being tested. And I find myself in a place where, you know, previous to this COVID pandemic and being locked in one place, I was traveling 300 plus days a year, sometimes 345 days a year out of 365. And finding myself home and having to transition everything to digital, you know, frankly, has been somewhat of a blessing and a gift, because I've been able to spend so much quality time with my lovely wife, who's my best friend and my favorite person to be around. So that in itself has been awesome. So I see it from a different lens. You know, there's a lot of people's perspectives that are down in the dumps and angry and upset right now. But Margaret and I were able to find, as they say, the light at the end of the tunnel in this situation, staying safe, thank God for right now, from COVID. Yeah. And our support goes out to all the people that have developed COVID, all those who have lost loved ones to COVID. It's tragic, no doubt. And it's terrified so many people around the world. But we are working hard to stay out of trouble and stay safe and to stay sane. You know, I have a diagnosed mental illness. I live with bipolar disorder type 1 with psychotic features, which is a very severe form of bipolar disorder. But I have been able to maintain a mostly level, even keel for this whole time, where I have my symptoms that used to be for days, weeks, months at a time. Now they're lasting only a few hours because I'm working so hard to curtail them.
That's amazing, Kevin. And that's something that is not easy to do. You know, I deal with like SAD, seasonal affective disorder, which is nothing in comparison to what you've been diagnosed with. And I have a hard time with that. So kudos to you for being able to, like, you know, get a grip on things and be able to learn how to cope and to deal. I can't imagine.
You know, it's really been about, I would say, discipline and working within a routine to better balance my brain health. I'm glad to talk about that if you'd like. You know, I have a YouTube channel that has 400 videos filled with stories of triumph over adversity. And there is a playlist, a series called The Art of Wellness under the playlist section that describes my 10 steps to living mentally well. And they are 12 videos, 10 steps, 3 to 5 minutes, easily digestible on how to better balance your brain, mind, behavior, mental health, and well-being, and your physical health. And people are saying from these videos, as far as Peru, Africa, China, Japan, that while following them for 3 to 6 to 9 months, they're seeing a dramatic improvement in their mental health. Wow. And these are common sense tools. These aren't special. These aren't any. These are evidence-based, science-informed tools that have been proven to change your way of thinking and your way of viewing your own mental pain, and getting you to a place where you are feeling better. And I'll roll out a couple of them. Yeah. Exercise, nutritious eating, and educating yourself as to your diagnosis so you can defeat it properly. Those are just three examples of the 10 steps. I follow them every day, and that's how I stay stable. And it's really something that I want to share with the world, that you don't have to, that bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, depression, severe depression, eating disorders, they don't have to be a death sentence. They can be a stepping stone to you taking the necessary path to better your mind and your well-being.
You know what? I'm really glad you said that. And I'm really glad you mentioned that they're just like common sense things that we can do in our everyday life. And it's not that like drastic or it's something like you said, nutrition, just educating yourself on your diagnosis, and exercise. I know that for me, exercise has always been a huge help, because when I go kickboxing, it just puts me in a better place. You know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel better up here, as I point to my brain, because Kevin and I are on Zoom right now. But it puts me in a good place. So I'm really, really glad that you mentioned those. And the rest you can find on your YouTube, which is youtube.com/Kevin Hines, right?
That's right. You bet.
Awesome. So Kevin, I'm glad to hear that you're doing so well now. And I love that you travel right now. That's not possible, but you've been traveling and right now you're doing digital stuff where you're having talks with people all about, you know, mental health and specifically your story. Mm-hmm. So where do we start?
You know what? Let's go back to the beginning.
Okay.
Just so people can get an idea of where I came from and how I came to be where I am today.
Okay, let's do it.
I was born in severe poverty. I was born to biological parents who, after they had me and my brother, fell to drugs and alcohol, substance use disorder. And they would leave me and my brother unattended to go do score or sell drugs. And one fateful day, one seedy motel clerk made what I call his most unseedy decision. He heard our screams and cries of neglect one too many times, and he called the police. This is the kind of guy who doesn't call the police because of all the things he's doing. He called the police. Police came in. And they took us along with protective, along with the folks from Child Protective Custody, and they took us in the foster care system in San Francisco. And we bounced around from home to home. And the simple idea was that me and my only full-blooded brother, Jordash, would be adopted together. But that's not what happened. As you know how these things go, we both got a vicious strain of bronchitis, and my only full-blooded brother died. And I lived. And, you know, I'll always wonder why me and not him. I bounced around from home to home. But unlike my poor brother, I got very lucky. I landed in the home of Patrick and Deborah Hines, and they would make me their son. And I've forever been a Hines since then. And they are my mom and dad. And they gave me a second chance at life. And I'm so grateful for that second chance. I'm so grateful to be alive, to exist. And, you know, from there, it was a rocky road after about 17 and a half years of age where I was diagnosed with bipolar. But I'm just glad that even after what I did by attempting to take my life at 19, I get to be here talking to you.
Yeah, geez, man, that is heavy, but it needs to be heard and it needs to be shared. We are talking to Kevin Hines today. He is a suicide survivor. He is a filmmaker. He is a son. He is a husband. He is a mental health advocate. And in my eyes, he's simply amazing. Don't go anywhere because we'll be back with more. His story does not end there. This is The Parenting Show right here on Global News Radio, 640 Toronto.
Now back to The Parenting Show with Pina Crispo on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Welcome back. This is The Parenting Show right here on Global News Radio 640 Toronto. And I'm your host, Pina Crispo of chicmama.ca. Today, we are talking about mental health. Tomorrow is Blue Monday. They say it's the most depressing day of the year. And a lot of people are suffering. They're suffering with mental health right now. It has been one crazy 10 months. But there's people that have been dealing with this outside of these 10 months during the pandemic. And our special guest, Kevin Hines from Atlanta, is joining us on the line today. He is a suicide survivor. He is a mental health advocate. He's a filmmaker. He's an author, a son, and an amazing husband. We heard Kevin get into a little bit of a story before the break. Kevin, you spoke about what it was like to be brought into the Hines family and become a Hines, and how you were diagnosed with bipolar disorder at the age of, did you say 17 and a half?
17 and a half, yeah.
So Kevin, how old were you when you joined the Hines family?
So they took me in at 9 months of age, and I was violently ill all day, every day for the first 30 days of being in the Hines home. Neither Debbie, my mom, or me slept for the first 30 days of me being in the house. I had been bounced around from so many houses that I was so sick and ill. And I had been, prior to being in the Hines home, I had been fed by my birth parents what my mom and dad, what my birth parents could steal. So Kool-Aid, Coca-Cola, and sour milk was my first diet. And I had a distended belly filled with liquid, a bruise from the top of my sternum to the bottom of my abdomen from being malnourished for so long. My gut to brain health was very, very poor. So initially, being in the Hines home, my mental health was poor. And what we didn't know back then in science, what we do know today about functional medicine as food to medicine, is that my organs had been poisoned, thus my brain had been poisoned, because your gut biomes are directly connected to your brain chemistry. And you know, when in the first 30 days of being in the Hines home, they took me to doctor visit after doctor visit, specialist after specialist, literally $1 million workup for this little infant. And no doctor could tell Pat and Debbie what was wrong with their new-to-be son until one specialist came forward and said, "Patrick and Debbie, there's nothing physically wrong with this child. It's all emotional." But he was wrong. If you talk to a doctor today, they would have said that my mental health was so poor and my physical health was so poor because of the junk I'd been fed. You know, after the first 30 days in, Debbie came to my crib and she leaned in And she goes, Gio, my birth name was Giovanni. She goes, Gio, you're safe. We're not going anywhere. But if you don't knock this off, we're going to have to give you back, which is a total contradiction. But she said that was the first night that both of us slept soundly in 30 days, as if my infant mind had fully heard and understood her words. And from there, it was, you know, from there, it was, it got a lot smoother, a lot better. And I was raised in a beautiful home, and really everything was going great until I had my first complete mental breakdown at 17 and a half.
Wow. I didn't realize that when you said your birth parents would leave you and your brother, that you were an infant.
Yep. I was just a tiny little guy. That was in the first 9 months of my life. Yeah.
Wow. Well, God bless the Hines.
Yep. You bet. Jeez. For sure.
So you mentioned a mental breakdown, your first mental breakdown.
Yeah.
When did that happen?
So I'll tell you what that looked like. Yeah. I'll tell you what that looked like. I was 17 and a half. I was in a play called How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. I was a theater kid amongst a football player and a wrestler, but I was a theater kid, and I'm in this rehearsal and opening night's about to begin. And I start to have these issues with like paranoid delusions. And I'm starting to think that people are out to get me, trying to hurt me, trying to kill me. And I'm not telling anybody because I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this is happening to me. As a matter of fact, you're so deep in it that you don't know that something is wrong. You just think like this is how you think. On stage, on opening night of the first, the first play, I look out into this 1,200 person crowd. Not one seat was open at our brand new Archbishop Reardon High School Theater. And I start to believe that every single one of the people in the audience is going to simultaneously rise, rush the stage, and end my life. I thought I believed that's what was going to happen in my psychosis, but I didn't know what it was. I just knew that to be my reality at the moment. And so I ran off stage. I ran to the lobby, and the theater director meets me there, and he says, "Kev, what the hell are you doing? You know, can you finish the performance? We're only halfway in." I just couldn't speak. I couldn't make out three words in a row that made sense. So we call my mom. Mom comes to pick me up. Very soon thereafter, I see my first psychiatrist. And it was just kind of a roller coaster from there. You know, both my theater teacher and my psychiatrist ended up taking their own lives, dying by suicide. They were the first two people of 10 people in my life I would lose to suicide. So I'm not just a suicide attempt survivor. I'm actually a survivor of 10 people I've lost to suicide that I really care about, some that I love dearly. And, you know, it's this whole battle with mental illness has been a really long and arduous journey. But ultimately, it took me from 17 and a half struggling every day without fail, really badly, to 19 years of age, moved in with my father at 18, 19 years of age, I began to think heavily of taking my life. And I found a method, which was the Golden Gate Bridge. The Golden Gate Bridge was the number one spot for suicide around the world. It is the largest and brightest beacon for being a harbinger of death of any place in the world. And I went there at 19 to take my life. And I got so lucky that I got to live. 98% of those who attempt off the Golden Gate Bridge never, ever again get to tell their stories. They're gone. And that leaves about 39 people who have survived that fall in 84 years of that bridge being opened. And I was number 26. There are only roughly about 26 remaining alive today. Many have died of natural causes or old age, those who survived. And of those 26 remaining alive today, 19 came forward after I did and said that the moment their hands left the rail, they had an instant regret from their actions. And this is because in that moment of free fall, you recognize that your thoughts don't have to become your actions, and you didn't have to do what you just did, but you think it's too late. Only 5 of us Golden Gate Bridge jump survivors of the 26 remaining alive today get the privilege to stand, walk, and run. And I'm one of those people.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You have been able to physically walk away from this.
Yeah. They call us the most exclusive survivors club in the world. There's a book of the same name by Ben Sherwood. in essence, I always say we get to be here. It's a privilege and a gift to get to be here after what we did. And I'm so grateful to be alive. And I always encourage people that if you're thinking of suicide, before you get to the point of attempting, say four simple but effective words to anyone willing to listen to you. I need help now. Because I have been suicidal many times after my attempt off the Golden Gate Bridge. I would say even hundreds of times after my attempt off the Golden Gate Bridge. I live with regular thoughts of taking my life. They come and they go. The difference between me and someone who dies by suicide today is that I always say I need help now, and I always say it loud and proud. Yeah. And I say it to anyone who's in front of me. I said it to TSA agents at the airport, you know, and got kicked off a flight once, you know, because I needed to be safe. And yeah. And that's how I stay alive with this diagnosis and this disease, and this fight internally allows me to be here tomorrow and every day after that, because I recognize my true value. I have become self-aware with my diagnosis. And thus, whenever I'm suicidal, I know I can reach out, and I know that reach out will end in me getting the help I need.
And this is going back to one of those 10 steps you were talking about, educating yourself on your diagnosis, you know, taking the time to educate yourself, learn about it, know what you need to do to help yourself, and saying, I need help now, you know, to that person in front of you, you're doing a lot for yourself. I'll never forget. I read your story a few years ago, and then recently I watched a Goalcast video where they talk about your story, and it was more in depth. And I'll never forget you're talking about being on the bus, getting on the bus, going to the Golden Gate Bridge, and you're bawling your eyes out on this bus. And some guy looks over at you and is just like kind of laughing, like, what the hell's wrong with this kid? And just kind of poking fun. And you were like, all I wanted, like, I was just waiting for someone to say, are you okay?
Yeah.
And that never happened.
The words we choose to people in lethal emotional pain can save their life if you're kind enough and working and compassionate enough. You're not always going to reach everybody, but you could certainly try to be that person, that one person on the bus that sees someone in that tearful pain and says, hey, buddy, you okay? Is something wrong? Can I help you? You know, or all of the above for that matter, because you could be the impetus to changing their destiny. And someone would have on that bus if they haven't. Now, people have always said to me, you know, Kevin, you talk about how your dad asked you if you were okay that morning. Well, that morning, I was not yet ambivalent. I could only see pain and death. I could only hear my suicidal voices in my head. I could only see that I had to take my life. And when my father asked me if I was okay, yes, I told him I was fine. I just had to be at school that day. And he, you know, it was on the bus, though, that I become ambivalent. I just desperately wanted to live while my brain was trying to kill me. I'm hearing voices in my head, auditory hallucinations. If you don't know what auditory hallucinations are like, imagine putting your earbuds on your ears with another person's voice inside your head, yelling and screaming at you that you don't recognize as your own consciousness, telling you things you have to do that you don't want to. That's how scary it is. What I did that day was the largest cry for help you could have imagined. Yeah. It went too far. And I do regret jumping off that bridge. If I could go back in time, I would put my hand on my shoulder and stop myself. Absolutely, because it led to so much pain. But I'm so grateful to be alive today, because now I get to travel the world sharing my story, yes, trying to help people who are in mental pain stay here.
Yes, I totally agree. I have lost two friends to suicide. One of those friends, I called a few hours too late. And we used to work with him in radio, and I called him and I said, his name was Martin, right? But being Italian, I had a joke with him, and I'm like, I'm making you Martino. You're Italian now, right? So I called him, and I'm like, it was Martin Streak, who's like legendary in Toronto for radio. And I'm like, Martino, I miss you. I love you. I'm worried about you. I'm like, give me a call. And then later on that night, I found out that he had taken his life. And it made me wonder, had that call come in a little bit sooner, would that have made a difference? Would that have been that person talking to you on the bus, Kevin, saying, are you okay, kid? Do you need something? Guys, I know it's a heavy show today, but it needs to be talked about. We are talking about mental health. Tomorrow is Blue Monday, and I couldn't think of a better guest in the entire world than Kevin Hines to join us and share his story. Don't go anywhere. We are going to be back with more. This is The Parenting Show, and I'm your host, Pina Crispo of chicmama.ca.
You're listening to The Parenting Show with Pina Crispo on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Welcome back to The Parenting Show. I'm Pina Crispo, your host, Pina Crispo from chicmama.ca, and we're talking mental health. Thank God for that little break, because I'm bawling my eyes out. Producer Loretta at the studio is bawling her eyes out. Kevin's probably just like, girls, get a grip. And when I say Kevin, I'm talking about Kevin Hines, our special guest. I am so honored to have him on the show today. He is an author. He is a mental health advocate. He is a filmmaker. He's a husband. He's a son. And he is a suicide attempt survivor. He jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge at the age of 19. And he is here with us today to talk about it. He has been able to walk away from that. Kevin, we just spoke about, you know, you getting on the bus and going to the bridge and hoping that someone would see you crying on the bus and say, are you okay? But no one did. And so you got off the bus and you walked over to the bridge.
I did. And I paced back and forth for nearly 40 minutes, crying like a child, and bikers, joggers, tourists, and runners walked by me. Police officers searching for suicidal people went by me twice. They hadn't been trained in suicide prevention. They are today, and today they save between 50 and 120 lives a year, which is amazing. But I picked a particular light rail, and eventually I leapt over that rail. And it was the millisecond that my hands left that rail that I had an instantaneous regret for my actions and the 100% recognition that I just made the greatest mistake of my life, and I thought it was too late. I fell close to 95 miles an hour in 4 seconds, hitting that water at that speed from 220 feet, went down 70 feet in the water, opened my eyes, and I was drowning. And I swam to the surface, feeling only my arms, not being able to feel my legs. I broke the surface. I shattered my T12, L1, and L2 lower vertebrae. I missed severing my spinal cord that day by 2 millimeters. And I'm flailing to stay afloat, and something is circling beneath me. And I thought, you've got to be kidding me. I didn't die jumping off the Golden Gate Bridge, and a shark is going to eat me. But it turned out it was no shark at all. A man who wrote into a TV show I was on later would say, Kevin, I'm so very glad you're alive. I was standing less than 2 feet away from you when you jumped. Until this day, no one would tell me whether you lived or died. It's haunted me until now. By the way, Kevin, there was no shark, like he mentioned on the show you were on, but there was a sea lion, and the people above looking down believed it to be keeping your body afloat until the Coast Guard boat arrived behind you. Subsequently, I've made many YouTube top 10 lists of animals saving human beings, but this creature came to my aid and literally bumped me up until the Coast Guard boat arrived behind me. Coast Guard boat arrives, they fish me onto a flatboard, they put me in a neck brace, they strap me in from head to toe, and they start asking questions. And their first question was, hey kid, do you know what you just did? And I said, yeah, I just jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge. And they said, why? And I had no logical, reasonable answer. I said, I don't know. I thought I had to die today. God. And I think about that sometimes. You know, I didn't have to do what I did. It was an impulse. It wasn't even a decision. People always say that person decided to take their life. They didn't decide to take their life. They got to a place in such mental instability where they thought there was no other course of action. That's a very different thing from deciding something. You decide to go get a piece of pizza. You decide to go get ice cream. You decide to go outside. You don't decide to take your life. You get compelled to do so by pain. Lethal emotional pain is what drives people to suicide. and a pain that is so great you think you can't bear it any longer. You think there's no other way out, and you think you're a burden to everyone who loves you, when in fact you are so important to everyone who cares for you. So, you know, it was a tumultuous and terrible day, but the Coast Guard got me to the ambulance. Ambulance got me to the hospital. They performed a 10 and a half hour back surgery to replace my shattered vertebrae with titanium. And I took a journey from being in a wheelchair to a walker and a back brace to a back brace and a cane within a matter of 4.5 weeks.
Wow.
Back on my feet. Yeah. And left that physical hospital, went right to a psych ward for another 4.5 weeks with my back brace and my cane. And then left that psych ward and went back into regular living, wore that back brace for the next 6 months, 6 to 8 months. And it was 7 months after my attempt that I had my first presentation I ever gave. And I was inspired by two clergymen, one in the psych ward and one who I went to church and saw. The first in the psych ward, Brother George Cherry, is a Franciscan friar. And he comes into my room in the psych ward and he goes, "Hey, kid, what are you in for?" And I said, "I jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and I was putting on my back brace." And he said, "Yeah, and I'm the Pope." He didn't believe me. He thought I was delusional. I said, "No, brother, that's why the back brace, that's why the cane, that's why I'm here." He said, "I'm so sorry, I feel so terrible, let's pray." And he comes over and he says, we say in Our Father together. He goes, "Kid, when you get better, you ought to talk about this." And I said, "About what to who?" I didn't know what he meant.
Yeah.
Every day, Brother George Cherry would come in and every day he'd say, "Kid, you better talk about this." And every day I would ignore him. On the last day he said, "Kid, I expect you're gonna talk about this." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, buddy, see ya." And I go to church the next week with my dad and the priest comes out, Father Michael Harriman, and he says, he would marry my wife and I later. And he says, "Kevin, how would you like to come and talk to our seventh and eighth grade class about your experience this Good Friday?" And I said, "Father, I don't have a speech and I wouldn't know what to say." And my dad shoved me forward and said, "He'll do it." I turned around, like, "What are you doing?" And he goes, "You'll do it. We need closure." And I'm like, "You need closure, old man. I need to go home and lay down." But he goes, "No, we're doing this." So on Good Friday, I went in front of 120 kids. I ended up getting 120 letters in return. And six of those kids were actively suicidal. We got them to help immediately. And that's how I decided to do this for the rest of my life.
Kevin, I honestly believe that like you were destined for this life. You know, it's crappy that there's like, you know, the mental health stuff that you've gone through, everything, the not so good stuff that you've gone through and the really stuff that you've gone through, but you survived for a reason. In my eyes, like I wish there was a way to find out how many people's lives you have saved through telling your story. And that's why it was so important for me to have you on the show today to share your story. I honestly think that like people like everywhere need to hear you speak. They need to hear what you just told us. And there's more. So if you're listening at home, don't go anywhere. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back. This is the Parenting Show right here on Global News Radio 640 Toronto. And we are talking to Kevin Hines.
Now, back to the Parenting Show with Pina Crispo from chicmama.ca on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
Welcome back to the Parenting Show. It is Sunday night and I'm your host, Pina Crispo of chicmama.ca. Guys, tomorrow is Monday. It is not any Monday, it's Blue Monday, which they say is the most depressing Monday of the year. People suffer mental health all the time before COVID hit. And it's something that we really need to talk about. It's something super important and something I've been an advocate of for a very long time. And so I thought, you know what? Who better to have on the show today than Kevin Hines, suicide attempt survivor. He jumped off of the Golden Gate Bridge at age 19 and has been able to not only walk away from that, listen to what I said, walk away from it, physically walk away, but he has been able to live to tell his story to people around the world. So Kevin, you spoke about talking to 120 kids on Good Friday about your experience. And that's when it all started, right?
Yeah. I spoke to 120 kids, first presentation I ever gave. I read the speech from the page, the pages, 17 pages, 45 minutes to read aloud. I dropped page by page to the floor with one hand while holding my cane with the other, wearing my back brace outside of my shirt. I was crying. I was shaking like a leaf. I was a mess. And I thought to myself, who is this going to help? It's a waste of my time, waste of their time. This is not helping them. And as I finished the last page dropped to the floor, eight hands go up. And I look at these eight hands and I'm like, what are these kids going to ask me? And they all ask intuitive, important, empowering questions. And I thought, oh my gosh, this had an impact. And then 2 weeks later, I got 120 letters from 120 kids, and six of them were actively suicidal, and we got them to the help they needed, and they're alive today. And that's that for me. When my father read those letters, he basically looked at me and said, Kevin, we have to do this however, wherever, and whenever possible. And we never stopped.
And that's when it started.
It led a 20-year journey into telling my story and changing lives.
So that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
20 years ago. Since then, you have been traveling all over the world, the country.
World, yeah. All over the world.
And sharing your story.
Yeah.
You've also written about it.
Yep. Wrote a book called Cracked Not Broken, Surviving and Thriving After a Suicide Attempt. It was an Amazon bestseller for some time. It actually still is on, it still sells pretty well today. It's a book that some have called the best detailing of a mental health story or an account that they've ever read. The former director of the National Council for Behavioral Healthcare wrote on the book that it's a pertinent book to read for anyone living with mental health crisis or anyone who loves them. And for personally, I think it's a book for anyone who's in any kind of pain. It's a book for anyone who's ever lost anything and been in pain of any kind, because it's universal in that way. It's the every man's book. It's the every woman's story. It's every individual's story. It's for all human beings. If you've lived on this earth long enough, you've been in pain.
Definitely.
And so that this book is for you. It's for you to help realize that pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. It's a choice. You have the option to let your pain build you brick by brick from the ground up and let it make you stronger than ever before. And that's what I've decided to do. I decided to make myself stronger from the pain I was in.
Wow, Kevin. So the book on Amazon, you guys can pick up. People can go to youtube.com/Kevin Hines to watch your videos there. And you've got your 10 videos that we spoke about earlier on your playlist, right?
Yeah, so the playlist series, The Art of Wellness, that's one playlist. There's many there. But the YouTube channel has 400 videos that we have made, all from our multimedia company, designed to change your life. So whatever kind of mental struggle you're going through, you will find videos on this channel to help you. And we make new videos every Thursday and Saturday. So, you know, it's something that we'll be continuing.
That's awesome. And then you also have a documentary.
Yep. We have a documentary out right now called Suicide, The Ripple Effect. And you can go to suicidetherippleeffect.com. And it's really about both the negative and positive ripple effects of suicide prevention and then of suicide. So the positive ripple effects of a suicide prevention is that you save a life, you change a life, and thus you change those that they love's life. And the negative effect, of course, is the devastating effect of someone losing someone to suicide. We talk to people from around the world in the film. We're in six different countries telling the story of people who have both lost loved ones and people that have survived their own attempts to go on to help others stay here. Our motto is be here tomorrow and every day after that. And that's why I wear this shirt.
Yeah, you've got a shirt on hashtag be here tomorrow, which is so powerful. Think about that for a second. Those of you listening at home, think about that for a second. Be here tomorrow.
Just one day at a time, just one 24-hour period, because there's so many people, Pina, today living in chronic suicidality that are regularly thinking of taking their lives. All you have to do is just focus on the next day. Just be here tomorrow and then get to that next day. we want people to fight their pain. We realize that it's difficult, but we know it's possible.
And know that you're not alone. Know that you're not alone. If there is something that you're going through, you're not alone. And like Kevin said, there's four words. I need help now to whoever is standing in front of you. Even like you said, if it is like a TSA officer at the airport that's going to get you kicked off of your flight. Like, you know what I mean?
You got to do. Your life is more valuable than that.
Yeah. And Kevin, and then you have another book coming out in, like, next month.
This is something that's very important to me. And this is the first new radio station I'm talking about it on. I lost, and we all lost, a great friend of mine, Jesse Cohen, to suicide recently. But before we did, he and I were working on a book, his life story, based on his life story. It was a bit of a fictional book based on his life story. And the book is so powerful and so moving. We decided that it had to still come out even though he passed away because it could save lives. It's called The Third Rail, and it'll be coming out likely February 27th, and previous to that on pre-sale. But it is a book that is going to change lives in a positive way. And he was one of the most powerful writers I've ever known. And we wrote that book together. I miss him dearly. His wife misses him dearly every day. Yeah. But we're going to put that out and try to find some help. It find some hope with people's hearts.
What a beautiful thing to do for him and his family. You know, it's tragic, and I'm so sorry for your loss, Kevin. But hopefully, you know what I mean? By reading that, he'll be able to save lives even from where he is today.
I think so. It's called The Third Rail. In My Mania, I Became. And it is one of the most powerful accounts of living with bipolar disorder that anyone will ever read.
Oh man, Kevin, I'm like in awe. I can't thank you enough. I wish we had more time on the show because I feel like I could talk to you forever. And I feel like, you know, people need to hear everything you need to, that you have to say, because it can really, really make a difference. So thank you for taking time to join us on the show. Honestly, you're simply amazing. Keep up the fantastic work. And I know that I'm definitely going to be following you along in the journey. Every step of the way, you know, you've got a cheerleader here in Toronto named Pina Crispo. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You bet, Pina. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Guys, if you missed any of the show and you want to listen back, you can do so on our podcast. Just go to Apple or anywhere podcasts are available, because this is a show you don't want to miss. Tomorrow's Blue Monday. And if you need help, please reach out to someone. Like Kevin said, four words. I need help now. That is it for us tonight on The Parenting Show, but we will catch you guys next week right here on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.